Support for the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast comes from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, a family-owned downtown Columbus restaurant, taproom, and brewery, showcasing seasonal menus and more than 20 Wolf's Ridge beers on draft. Learn more at wolfsridgebrewing.com.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. A new California law prohibits the NCAA from barring a university from competition if its athletes are compensated for the use of their name, image, or likeness. It goes into effect in 4 years and is already being called a game changer in college sports. And there are plenty of critics, including Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith. He co-chairs a committee studying the issue of student-athlete compensation. He said this week that he's unsure how the new law would work.
I'm not saying it can't be done. I struggle after all these years as an AD trying to figure out how I'd create a regulation for that to ensure that there's a fair play across this country. I just don't know how we do that.
Joe Nocera is a Bloomberg columnist and co-author of the 2015 book Indentured, the inside story of the rebellion against the NCAA. Welcome back, Joe.
Thanks for having me. By the way, isn't Dean Smith the guy who gave himself a bonus because a college wrestler won a championship? just want to throw that in there.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, the issue of compensation for administrators and coaches is part of this conversation. By the way, we did invite OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith to join us. He declined our invitation, but we're going to use cuts of comments he's made this week throughout the show to hopefully provide some balance. Joe, you've been following this issue for years. What did you make of the new California law when it was signed into law?
I think it's the beginning of the end for the NCAA in terms of its ability to run as a cartel and keep create a $1 billion business off the backs of free labor. I think it's the beginning of the end. I think by 2023, when it's supposed to go into effect, I believe that all 50 states will have passed similar legislation and that NIL rights will already be being paid by then.
I'm still trying to kind of understand how a state can tell the NCAA what to do.
Well, the NCAA just has rules. The California has laws. I mean, who preempts who? The state has every right to say, players can be compensated. The NCAA has things they could do. They could throw the California schools out. I mean, it's not that different from California saying we have auto emission rules that are different from the federal. It's
right.
Not that. I mean, California, if the NCAA wants to say California is no longer in conformity with the NCAA and their schools can no longer be part of the NCAA, they have every right to do that. It's a membership organization. But what's happened here is that California has done something that will force other states and the NCAA to adopt to what it wants, because nobody is going to throw USC, UCLA, Berkeley, et cetera, out of the NCAA. That's just not going to happen.
Smith said this week that if the California law is implemented, he won't schedule games against California schools. Let's listen.
The rules are different in different states like they are. I would not. I mean, that's not who we are. I'd stay with those states and those schools that are like we are in the NCAA.
What do you make of that?
I just laugh. I mean, so he's not going to play in the Rose Bowl if there's a California team in the Rose Bowl? I mean, the conference commissioner of the Big Ten, Jim Delaney, once said under oath that if players started to get paid, the Big Ten would go to Division III. You think that's going to happen? I'm sorry, I'm getting a little carried away.
No, this is, when you say it's the beginning of the end, this is an iteration of a lot of other things could be happen going forward, right?
Absolutely.
Or not an iteration, but it's a stepping stone.
It certainly is. Look, the thing to really compare this to is the Olympics. So when the Olympics was purely amateur and they had very strict rules around payment for athletes, for Olympic athletes, and there was a movement to do exactly what California has done, to allow athletes to make endorsements, to get money for training, to do all sorts of things, but not to get paid for playing the game. And the Olympic defenders of yore said this will destroy the Olympics and no one will watch it anymore and it won't be as good. None of those things happened. None. In this case, you know, nobody's taking a penny out of a university's pocket. Nobody. Nobody's saying to Gene Smith, you can only make $2 million instead of $3 million. Nobody's saying that. They're just saying the players who have the ability to sign autographs for money, to get endorsements. You know, I could see the University of Connecticut's women's basketball team doing, a car ad for a local car dealership. I could totally see that. Why is that so terrible? So for him to be high and mighty about, you know, we're not like that, it's BS. What they're not like is seeing the players, you know, make some money for their labor.
How has the NCAA responded thus far?
Not well. The NCAA has basically taken the first. They're claiming that the law is unconstitutional, which is hilarious on its face. I mean, the NCAA has been ruled to be an antitrust violator over the last 3 or 4 years. So that's one thing. And then they basically made the same kind of claim that California would, you know, won't be able to be in the NCAA anymore. We may have to cut out the California teams, blah, blah, blah. And California, to its credit, has just said, you know, we're the fifth largest economy in the world. You don't threaten us. That's not going to work. And part of those threats, I mean, when is the last time you saw legislatures pass a bill this potentially controversial unanimously? I can't ever remember.
Right.
There was not a single dissent in either the House or the Senate in California. And part of the reason, not the entire reason, but part of the reason is the legislators felt insulted by the NCAA that they would dare tell California what you can and cannot do.
We're talking about the state of California voting unanimously for a law that would ban the NCAA from barring schools that permit students to earn money on their likenesses and their autographs and such from playing. My guest is Joe Nocera. He's a Bloomberg columnist. He co-authored the 2015 book Indentured, The Inside Story of the Rebellion Against the NCAA. New York has its own version teed up, right? What's that going to do? Or would it do?
Say that again. Who is that?
The state of New York is working on its own. Yeah.
Right. So there are, I think the state of Washington is working on this, the state of New York. They're all sort of variations. Some of them are exactly like California. Others allow for payments of other sorts. I don't know the details, really. Mm-hmm. I did want to correct one quick thing that you said.
Mm-hmm.
The law doesn't tell the NCAA to do anything. All it says is that the California schools cannot prevent an athlete from making money from endorsements or image or likeness.
Right.
In other words, you can't kick somebody off the team because they signed an autograph for $100. You can't do that. And so that's all the law says. The NCAA, you know, it has nothing, really doesn't speak to the NCAA at all, and it kind of forces the NCAA to decide how it's going to react to this.
If you have a question or comment out there, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. The beginning of the end, how soon, or do you think that by 2023 that they'll just be paying student-athletes, or do you think it's going to go more this route?
I think it's going to go this route at first. It's a hard to see. I think within 2 years, you know, there'll be 30, 35 states will have passed this, and that the NCAA will essentially be forced to allow name, image, and likeness rights to be paid to athletes. And then I think they'll try to hold the line there. And I don't know if they'll be successful or not, because it's hard to know what will happen. It's hard to know if the NIL rights will be abused by, you know, some Alabama booster, you know, who decides that he's going to pay $2 million for an autograph. It's hard to know. How that's going to play out. But I think the NCAA will try to hold the line there, and then the next fight will be over whether athletes should get regular compensation for playing the game. And then you get into this whole other issues around Title IX, around do you play the quarterback the same as the halfback, the same as the linebacker, the same as the basketball player? Do you play the, you know, that gets a lot messier. I personally think it's all solvable, but it gets messier. This is one of the things that's appealing about this is it's simple. You know, it's a simple thing.
You know, I understand what you're saying, that it's not going to change Gene Smith's bottom line when it comes to his paycheck from OSU, but it could change his bottom line when it comes from endorsements or, you know, things like that. You know, the local Chevy dealer kind of an ad. I don't know if he does that, but, you know, there may be money going more towards student athletes and away from the likes of, you know, the coaches and that kind of a thing.
I don't really think that'll happen, okay. But I'm not going to cry if it does.
And do you see student athletes' behavior decisions about where they're going to go in the future changing because of this?
Well, yes, absolutely. I mean, there's no question that if California is allowing endorsements and Ohio State is not, players are going to gravitate to California. That's one reason why, for all their blather about how they're going to hold the line, they're not going to. They can't hold the line because everybody wants the best players, and they're not going to. If they see that the best players are going to California, they will change their rules They will adjust. Let me give you a small but telling example. The courts have ruled that players are allowed to get checks to make up the differential between their scholarship and the full cost of college, right? Mm-hmm. And in Alabama, at the University of Alabama, that differential used to be $2,000. And then once the courts passed that rule, the differential in Alabama suddenly, amazingly, is $6,000. So you don't think Alabama changed that because they wanted to be able to compete financially with other schools that had a higher differential? I think they did.
What are other coaches saying out there besides, you know, we've heard a lot from Gene Smith, but what about across the country?
Coaches have been pretty quiet about this. There are definitely some. Chip Kelly in California was supportive of it. John Calipari at the University of Kentucky has not said anything about it, but I would be shocked if he didn't support this because he's always been somebody who talks about player welfare and how the players have not been treated properly over the years by the NCAA. I think there's sort of quietly a lot of approval on the part of many coaches for this rule, but they don't really want to say it out loud because they don't want to tick off the NCAA.
I have heard some coaches in California aren't for this, or universities, I should say.
Well, you know, it's one less measure. I mean, I'm cynical about this. I mean, coaches.
Really?
Yeah. Coaches like control. Coaches want control. Coaches don't like it when there's a new transfer rule that makes it easier for players to transfer from one school to another. Coaches hate that. They want control. And if players are able to make money on the outside, they worry, oh, this is going to take too much time. He's going to do a commercial. Mm-hmm. He's going to have so much money. He's not going to be paying attention, blah, 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 blah. You know, as I said before, they will adjust. You know, pro coaches face the same problem. Geometrically, and they deal with it. So, I mean, coaches will learn to deal with it.
Well, Joe Nocera, as always, I appreciate your candor. Thanks so much for joining us.
You know, this is the first interview I've given on the radio on this subject, and I have to say, I must have a lot of pent up feelings about this that I expressed on your show.
Well, thanks a lot. It's projected or foretold this
yes.
4 years ago. So here we are, 4 years later, and 4 years hence, who knows? You know what we'll
That's
be talking
right.
about, right?
Right? We'll be talking about paying the players directly. You and I.
Joe Nocera, Bloomberg columnist, co-author of the 2015 book *Indentured: The Inside Story of the Rebellion Against the NCAA*. We're going to continue our conversation. I'd love to hear from our listeners. What do you think? Here we are in Buckeye Country. What do you think about the idea of one of these football stars or basketball stars getting on, or maybe it's a gymnast that gets to tout the good stuff about the local, as I said, Chevy dealer. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support for the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast comes from Wolf's Ridge Brewing, a family-owned downtown Columbus restaurant, taproom, and brewery, showcasing seasonal menus and more. Stop by to enjoy one of more than 20 Wolf's Ridge beers on tap.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Dan Fisher. A new California law allows universities there to or prohibits universities in California from banning athletes from being compensated for the use of their name, image, or likeness. Not everyone is on board with the new law, including OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith. He co-chairs an NCAA committee studying the issue of student compensation. If the California law is implemented, Ohio State won't schedule games against California schools, Smith said earlier this week. Lawrence Funderburk is a certified financial planner, an OSU basketball and MBA alumnus. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
And Lucia Dunn is a professor of economics at Ohio State University. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Listeners, we did invite OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith to join us. He declined our invitation, but he did speak on this earlier this week quite a bit, and we have lots of cuts from that. Lucia, you endorse a free market approach for college student athletes, and that they should be based on how much revenue their sport generates, on how much they can, you know, how much the market will bear when it comes to other things like their likenesses, their autographs, and that kind of a thing. What do you make of the California law?
Well, to me, as an economist, it's going in line with what so much research in economics has shown us over the centuries, going back to Adam Smith and earlier. We know from that kind of a study that economies work best and resources are allocated most efficiently when the labor factor is paid in line with the value of what it contributes in its endeavor to its, you know, employer, if you want to call it that, or in its endeavor in a labor market. And the fact is that there's been a lot of study on the value of what these student athletes are contributing, the value of what all athletes are contributing, and they always show that that value is much greater than the value of the college scholarship. And so economists feel that it's led to misallocation of resources. Things are inefficient. The best people aren't going to the best places. Opportunities are unequal. We just feel it's very problematic when an entity like the NCAA steps in and stops the operation of the market, essentially. Now, of course, in a college setting, it's not like General Motors. Things are going to be different. There are a lot of other considerations. I think Lawrence is going to talk to that. But certainly, and I just looked up some numbers, the National College Players Association, in connection with Drexel University, has said that the average value of a college football player, you know, per season, is about $178,000. And if you look at some programs like Texas, it's $666,000. There have been studies by Roger Noel, a famous sports economist, and others that look at just the star players, not the bench warmers, but the star players. And they say that those football players contribute as much as $1 million a year to their teams. And it's even greater for basketball, where there are fewer players. And of course, they get a bigger slice of the pie. And so things are really out of whack in this market. And so I think the California law is one step towards bringing things back to what we consider to be reasonable economic principles.
Lawrence Funderburk, you don't think college athletes should be paid, but there's qualifications for that. Tell us what your philosophy is on this topic.
Yeah, you know, like a lot of the kids who are going to benefit if this actually goes through, grew up like me, poor, fatherless, dysfunctional home, right? So, and they're basically subsidizing really a lot of the scholarships that exist. And people say, well, you're making the case for paying these athletes. I'm not making a case for that. But what we have to think about, we have context, which the context is you basically have a lot of these kids or a few kids really who are bringing in a lot of revenue. And if you're going to make it fair, how are you going to make it fair? If you do, you're going to have to pay only the athletes who are actually bringing in the revenue. Look at myself. I wore number 34 at Ohio State. Before me was Tregley. After me was Terrence Dowse. I helped this university bring in a lot of money, but I don't feel shortchanged because of my experiences. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that I took advantage of the education and the opportunities in front of me. So we have context. We also have conviction. A lot of people are convicted by this, but if you have context and conviction without clarity, you're misguided. And I think we bring in a lot of subjective experiences with this, and we're not really thinking clearly about how do you actually empower these athletes. My whole position has always been one of, yes, if you can compensate, there are other ways that you can do it. Even if you give money, I played in the NBA, made a lot of money, but money in and of itself does not solve the deficits that already exist. Some of these kids are 4 or 5 grades behind when they come into college. They push them into meaningless degrees. You can have passion, but if you can't profit from it, what is that going to, the degree going to do for you?
What about this incremental approach of letting them just profit from their likeness, their autographs, that kind of a thing?
I'm not really for it. I get what they're trying to do. It's kind of a back way of really dealing with this mm-hmm. issue. Now we're here. The NCAA, they've been dragging their feet for many, many years in terms of this. I grew up on an era. We just started in the 90s in terms of the big contracts, television contracts, all of those things started happening. But I think there are other things that we can do. I have several suggestions that I recommend that can be done. But just giving someone money or likeness, I think it magnifies the deficits that already exist with these kids. And most of these kids grew up like me, but they didn't take education seriously. And I think this is a big problem. And we have to address this really from a rational perspective, not from an emotional point of view.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. That's Lawrence Funderburk. He's a certified financial planner. He's also an alumnus of the Ohio State men's basketball team and a former NBA player. And he's the author of the book Socio-Psychonomics, How Social Classes Think, Act, and Behave Financially in the 21st Century. So he's talking about more than just his experience as a pro and college basketball player. Also with us, Lucia Dunn. She's a professor of economics at Ohio State University. She endorses compensation for student athletes. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Angela in Columbus, I think you want to echo what Lawrence just said, right?
Yes, ma'am. I really appreciate what Mr. Funderburk said, and I do agree. I think really it comes down to a philosophy. Are these students athletes, or are they athlete students? And I really believe they need to be students, because if these kids, the ones that are even at a higher level, which is really what we're talking about, they oftentimes don't even get a good degree, or they're poor, you know, later in their life. Even if they're lucky enough to play pro, which very few are, they don't last very long. They don't have any money saved. They don't have a degree. And I think it's a serious disservice, because we are institutions of learning, and these kids need to learn, and they need to get a degree that they can actually, you know, support themselves outside of sports. I mean, I don't disagree with sports. I love sports. I was an athlete too, but, you know, you have to get a degree so you can support yourself.
Lawrence? Let me say this. College is not for everybody, but education is. Are we in the business of educating or schooling? You can be in school and not learn anything. There are a lot of kids who come to college and not learn anything. I work with in the professional community, and they say 75% of the kids who are not able to retain their job or stay on a job, they don't have the soft skills. They don't know how to communicate. They don't have the critical thinking skills. They don't have the relationship skills. And you have these kids, you look at the markers, kindergarten, third grade, fifth grade, and eighth grade, they look and see the deficits in terms of these kids, particularly poor kids, black kids, fatherless kids, just like myself. And then when you get to college, you're 4 or 5 grades behind. Sure, you're not going to really graduate with a meaningful degree, but can you at least learn something And it's not about the next 4 years. This is Charlie Scott, who played in the NBA, was the first African-American, I believe, to play in the ACC, also played at North Carolina. His son, Shannon Scott, played here. He said, Lawrence, listen, I have no illusions that my son is going to play professionally. If he does, that's fine. It's not about the next 4 years. He says, Lawrence, it's about the next 40 years. That's what college is supposed to prepare you for.
So, Lucia Dunn, what about that? I mean, is there... If more students were getting more out of their education, more student athletes were getting more out of the student part of the experience, would that compensate for anything?
Well, yes, of course, I agree with everything that Lawrence is saying. And this is a discussion that's been going on for decades in academic circles. And not just student athletes. You know, there are many, many students coming into universities now. And, of course, most of them having to – or a lot of them having to take student debt. And we're failing those kids, too, that they're not getting what they – the kind of skills and tools they need to go out and compete in the real world. So that's a much broader, deeper issue. And the student athlete thing is one part of it. I don't see that being resolved anytime soon. But one thing I want to throw in that is really driving a lot of the movement now towards compensation for student athletes that we haven't been discussing is the risk-taking factor. You see, in economics, that's a very critical component of what you get paid. What kind of risk do you undertake? And if you look at what they're doing in South Carolina, there's some legislators in the South Carolina Assembly, State House, who are going to introduce a bill, they say, after the first of next year, which will go even further than the California one. Not only their bill, as they're currently constructing it, not only will allow, you know, compensation for the use of image, but will also allow out-and-out payment. And some of the people behind that bill have discussed this in the press, and they say, you know, they were driven to do this when they saw a very serious injury for a very promising USC, the other USC, University of South Carolina football player. And it just wrecked his career future, you know, prospects. And so it is true that the student in a lot of sports, especially football, where a lot of this conversation is centered, are taking on all the risk. And we are learning every day more and more about just how dangerous these kinds of contact sports are. And certainly not to let them get compensated for that risk-taking doesn't seem fair. Not only is it a violation of economic principles, but I think you have to think of the individual and the human aspects of this, and there's something about it that just doesn't seem fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lawrence, what about that risk? You're in basketball, which is supposedly a non-contact, but seriously, right?
When you play against Shaquille O'Neal, it's a contact sport. Okay? let me just say this. I have several surgeries. I've had a torn Achilles. Two knee surgeries here at Ohio State. So it is a contact sport. I had to take out two insurance policies, Lloyd's of London, when I was here at Ohio State.
As a student. And you had to pay for that yourself.
I had to pay for it myself. Not only that, I transferred in conference from Indiana to Ohio State. So I was not on scholarship. I had to take on debt just like everybody else. Fortunately, it worked out for me because I went on to play professionally and I could pay the debt back right away. But the one thing is we can't legislate fairness. Life is intrinsically unfair. Risk-taking, I agree wholeheartedly with her. I think that's one of the things. Certainly, we should have some policies in place that where these kids, you at least have something there where kids can actually pay for, not have money set aside so they can pay for these insurance policies, because some of these kids get career-ending injuries. Now, it's not so much because you can come back from various surgeries, but still, it can still hurt your draft selection. Risk-taking is exactly, I'm someone who understands risk and reward and all of that, particularly being in the financial services sector. Mm-hmm. But I think there should be some life skills ongoing, not just in terms of compliance, a couple classes here and there, or bringing in a guest speaker. Ongoing, there needs to be mentoring with these kids, particularly kids like myself who have deep-rooted daddy issues, a lot of them broken homes, and have a lot of trouble relating and taking matters in terms of authority. And then you also have, how about something like a 401k where you defer it? So every year you stay in school, they credit a certain amount of money to your account. So I'm not against compensation. I say you handicap them when you give them money right away, and you create deficits and gaps between not only their teammates, but also in terms of other students and peers, because now they see themselves as a pro. And they come into college thinking that anyway. Most of these kids who come in football and basketball, let's be honest, there's only two sports to bring in money in terms of college.
Mm-hmm.
Men's basketball and football. That's it. Everyone else, they subsidize scholarships for all these kids. I have a daughter who's a swimmer. And you look at these suburban sports, basically, and they're basically white kids who can afford college, really on their own. Doesn't mean that they won't struggle, but they can pretty much afford it. But you basically have poor black kids who are subsidizing the scholarships for others. I'm not making a case for paying, but I'm saying how can we empower the student athlete? That's my point.
Yeah. Lucia Dunn, what about that? I mean, what about the essence of amateurism and you know, the arguments were made not just now about that, but also with the Olympics.
Yes, I heard your earlier guest, Jonas Serra, address that in the context of the Olympics, and I agree with him completely. Everybody was saying it's going to be the end of the world for the Olympics if we allow, you know, any kind of compensation to come in for these athletes. And, of course, it wasn't. In some ways, it makes the Olympics more interesting. I love seeing those athletes in the commercials, you know, leading up to the Olympics. It piques my interest. Empowering these kids, it's a very important problem. And it's dealt with, again, not only in the athletic world, but in every aspect of life. Mm-hmm. In every industry, this is a problem. And I think it's a very serious issue that minority groups, disadvantaged minority groups, are overrepresented in the college athletic ranks. The legislature in California who introduced the bill, Nancy Skinner, she has said that is what originally drove her to introduce the bill, the fact that she thought there was a racism in this. And then as she got into it, she said, no, she realized it was hurting. I mean, yeah, yes, she still contends there's a racism to it, but it's hurting all kinds of students, not just the minority mm-hmm. students. So it's part of a bigger issue in society. It's very visible as it plays out in the athletic arena because so many eyes are on that area of our society.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a bigger issue. Now, one other thing before I quit, and Lawrence brought this up, how do you compensate them? And this, you know, the devil is going to be in the details. Jason Gay, the writer for The Wall Street Journal, has had some very good suggestions on this, if you follow his columns. But certainly all of us who've been parents can see the problems of turning over large sums of money to an 18-year-old. And they are not the best decision makers at that point. Mm-hmm. So if there is going to be compensation, I think it is fair to have maybe it's a committee of the NCAA, maybe it's some, you know, independent committee, but somebody try to work out how that money comes to them. And I think the idea of a 401k is a great one in any other industry. You produce that kind of value for your employer and take that kind of risk, you would have a substantial pension, you know, allotment to you. And as Lawrence has said, these kids come out and they have nothing. So, yes, do something like that. And let's put our effort now into thinking about what the wisest way to introduce this compensation is.
I think I can't remember the name of the football player right now, but he was a superstar, you know, back when they went into the triple overtime and the national championship back 10 or so years ago at Ohio State. And he had his best friend had died and he couldn't afford to go
Maurice
to the
Clarett.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And Maurice Clarett, and he couldn't afford to go to the funeral. And I thought there is something wrong with that picture that this guy can't afford to go to the funeral of his best friend when he's this superstar. What about that?
I agree with that. I was actually at that game. Me and Jimmy Jackson, we played for the Sacramento Kings, and we flew from Sacramento to that game to watch it. Afterwards in the locker room, we saw Maurice in a corner, and he was the only one who wasn't really excited about the win. But I know he had the backdrop was this issue with his friend and the fact that he said they're making all this money on my number 13 jersey, all those things. And we've talked about this, and we sit on opposite ends in terms of this compensation issue. Mm. But I like what he's doing, and I love what he's doing now. And actually, and he's actually making a difference in the lives of others. And I agree with that. Part of that empowerment fund, a lot of, like my mom, she couldn't go to games. I say, you look at some of these kids who are from various places, their parents, their families cannot get there. So there should be something set aside to get their parents there. Again, this is part of that process. Also, we can set up a scholarship fund for the kids. See, if you want to empower, educate, you just don't empower, educate the life. You have to empower and educate the legacy, because there are others who are following their footsteps. How about setting up a scholarship fund for these athletes' as kids that they have? And some of them have kids. They have kids right now, and they're 18,
or
19,
like
20 years of age.
Or that kind
brothers
of a
and
thing.
Sisters or something. There are other things that we can do, because, as I said, college is not for everybody, but education is. We have to have an education. And I think I was an outlier because I grew up this way, but education was always very important to me. I have 3 degrees, and I'm from the ghetto. I'm from the projects. I'm from the hood. I'm from the streets. I know that well, but I also understand the language of education. And that's where we need to focus on.
We will continue our conversation. That's Lawrence Funderburk, certified financial planner, alumnus of Ohio State men's basketball team, and a former NBA player. His book, Socio-Psychonomics, How Social Classes Think, Act, and Behave Financially in the 21st Century. Also with us, Lucia Dunn, professor of economics at Ohio State University. Love to hear from you. What do you think about this, paying athletes or letting them earn compensation for their likeness, for their autograph outside of the university program? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. A new law in California makes it illegal for California colleges to deny their student-athlete opportunities to gain compensation for the use of their name, image, or likeness. California Governor Gavin Newsom signed the bill into law on Uninterrupted. That's an athlete empowerment network owned by NBA star LeBron James. Newsom said California was just the start in addressing compensation for student-athletes.
People are hitting this, not just in California, but all across the country, because the gig's up. Billions and billions of dollars, $14+ billion goes to these universities, goes to these colleges, billion-plus revenue to the NCAA themselves. And the actual product, the folks that are putting their lives on the line, putting everything on the line, are getting nothing.
We're talking about the economics of college sports and compensation for student athletes. Still with us, alumnus of Ohio State men's basketball team and former NBA player Lawrence Funderburk. He wrote the book Socio-Psychonomics, How Social Classes Think, Act, and Behave Financially in the 21st Century. Also, OSU Professor of Economics Lucia Dunn. We did invite OSU Athletic Director Gene Smith to join us. He declined our invitation. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're saying a sea change, Lucia Dunn, is what it's going to take. Do you believe that there's going to be a sea change, or is it going to be sort of like the, you know, erosion toward it?
Well, I think it's going to come, probably it's going to come faster than the NCAA is prepared for.
Hmm. Because of other states enacting similar laws?
Yes, or, yes. Okay. And just forces of the market. You know, the market works. It's like water running downhill. Mm-hmm. It's like the tides. You can't stop it. And certainly the market forces are asserting themselves here. We see a lot of inefficiencies, you know, not covering the risk and misallocation of resources. Another side where there are inefficiencies is on the consumer side. I address the production side, where, you know, we feel labor should get paid the value of what it produces. But also we have this notion called consumer sovereignty in economics. And that means by being willing to pay the price, consumers can get what they want. They can express their desires and wants and get what they need and want in markets. So a lot of people argue that these rules have held down smaller colleges whose alums would be willing to put out money so that they could hire, you know, really good talent for their football teams. You know, it's like if I want fresh papaya every day and I'm willing to pay enough, there's a grocer who's going to, you know, supply that. So we think about it from that side, too, as economists, that, you know, if the market is out there working and if the demand side, the consumers of this product are willing to put out the money for their school to be able to get, you know, pay and get the best talent, well, we feel that gives the best economic outcome in the end.
I want to take a caller right now, John in Columbus. You're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
You bet.
So I'm actually a student at Ohio State. I'm an undergrad here, but I'm also from the Netherlands. That's where I was born and my family is from. And I would honestly like to see a system here in the U.S. similar to universities there, where if you go to university, you have one job, and that's the job of a student. And then if you want to play sports, you can do that in a sort of semi-pro league, starting at like a club level, then moving on to pro if you're good enough, so you can get that practice that students here in university get. I like this because I think a lot of the time it's forgotten that Ohio State is actually a level one research institution. We have students and faculty doing amazing research work. And while I love to watch football, that's not why I'm in college. And I think that's not why other students should go to college as well.
We hear that suggestion from time to time. Lawrence Funderburk, I mean, the culture in this country is so imbued with college athletics.
You know, she talked about misallocation of resources. And I think the greatest misallocation of resources is really intellectual capital, because we need to be in the business of really instituting a program, a system in place where we improve the intellectual capital of every student who steps on this campus, regardless of the deficits they have when they come on campus. I was an athlete that I was torn. You had the academic and athletic side that clash. There are people who are on the academic side have just as big as egos as any of the coaches in terms of what they bring to the table. So I get that. And I was someone who I can merge in and out of both sides very easily, because I didn't graduate with a meaningless degree. I had business finance. There were a lot of my professors who didn't like me because I played athletics. Because they saw and they thought that
they
that I owed him because I was a big man on campus or whatever. But when I went to them and I said, listen, I'm here to learn, even if we have a late game and I get in at 2 or 3, I'm going to be in class at 9 o'clock the next day. And you know what? They gave me the benefit of the doubt, because they realized that I appreciate what they brought to the table. And I didn't expect that they owed me anything. And here's what I'm going to say. Here's a big issue. The only way we're going to be serious about this, all of the people who give money to Ohio State and they talk about how big of a Buckeye fan they are, until they start really thinking not just about their own legacy in terms of what they do and giving back to this university, until they think about the legacies of the kids that are on those fields. Do you care about just their lives, or do you care about the legacies that they have? Because I think this is the issue, too. I get very upset with boosters, and I see all these alums, people give all this money, but they don't think about the legacy of these kids, because once they're gone in terms of their eligibility, it's on to the next crop of athletes who come in. What a disgrace.
John, thank you so much for that call. I want to get to another one. Chuck, are you in Michigan?
I'm from Michigan.
You're from?
I'm here in Columbus today.
Okay.
I am a Michigan grad and a season ticket holder up there at my alma mater. And the reason for my call is that the presumption here seems to be that the flow of money into college athletics is unlimited and will continue no matter what. And I'm here to say that if college athletics goes the route of professionalism, as it seems to be now, I'm out. I'm done. I really don't want NFL light or a NBA light. I'd much rather go play golf on weekends on beautiful fall days. I like college football because it's college football, not because it's some lightened version of the NFL. I abhor the NFL. I loathe it, and I never watch it, and I have no interest in it.
Lucia Dunn, what about that? That I guess there's a margin. That's around the margins. There are going to be people like Chuck.
Oh, yes. There are many people out there who, espouse that point of view, that there's a whole aura about college sports, and you go into the shoe, and the band is there, and the rah-rah, and they don't want that to change. But I think, you know, I've seen enough studies of people who've looked behind all of that that say, you know, really what you the average person sitting in the shoe on the weekend doesn't understand is it's big, big money here. It's all about the money. Mm. It's and think of the way that other things have been going, bringing in sales of alcohol in the games. I mean, that's a move that has to do with money that some people are very, you know, disagreed with.
I remember when I went to Michigan State, they were put on academic probation for illegal recruiting or for recruiting violations, and they banned them from television for several years, the Michigan State football team.
Yeah.
That's incomprehensible to think that that would happen today because of the money that's involved.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The money. The money is there, big money.
Yeah, yeah. Let's see. Mark in Hilliard, you're on the air. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thank you very much.
You bet.
I have to say my views are kind of similar to the person from the Netherlands.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a school that offered, a college that offered no football or basketball scholarships. You know, and people played, tried out for a team or played intramural sports because they wanted to play sports. And basically everybody went for an education. Then I came to Ohio State to go to graduate school and discovered that, quote-unquote, student-athletes were incredibly privileged compared to other students and were given all sorts of resources from tutoring and study centers and other things that normal students had no access to. And those contrasting experiences made me essentially implacably opposed to treating student athletes different in any way from other students, and I, the idea of giving them money above and beyond all the other privileges, you know, just honestly makes me see red. And I could never agree to something like that.
You just contrasted two very different experiences, Lawrence Funderburk. What do you think of what Mark's saying?
Well, I mean, he makes a valid point, but the fact of the matter is, these athletes are bringing in a lot of money that are subsidizing scholarships for normal, he says normal, quote unquote, normal students, right? So if that revenue goes away, so do a lot of those scholarships. You look at football and basketball bringing the money. But then you think about hockey and swimming and lacrosse and baseball and all this. These kids would not be able to go to school, particularly because they're being subsidized by basically two sports. Right. So we can you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. We have to really think about this and say, how can we tweak this system? It's not going to be a perfect system, but how can we do it in a way that it's never going to be fair? But how do we do it in a way where you create a system in place where everyone is empowered? The athletic departments, the student athletes. Or are they athlete students? We can debate that.
Mm-hmm.
But also the regular student body. And then once you start paying these, the rift will go even wider and wider between students, athletes, and then the regular students in general. And I think there's really no easy answer, as Lucia mentioned. Excellent observation. There's no easy answer for this. And this has been compounding. We kicked the can down the road. Now the can is on the basketball court and on the football field. What are we going to do with it?
Lucia Dunn. I think one of the things that's brought this issue into stark relief is how much the coaches make now.
Yes, coaches.
And assistant coaches.
Trainers.
Trainers, right. They make a lot of money.
That's a lot
of money. If you're in the Big Ten, you know, in one of the big,
and,
big,
you know,
conferences.
Again, you know, people, you know, prominent researchers in the economics profession. I'm thinking right now about Rodney Ford, a professor at Michigan. They have studied this and written about it extensively, and what they say is, and this is why economists feel the system is not efficient, because the players create the value, and then that value essentially gets sucked up by, you know, administrators in the athletic department, coaches, assistant coaches, trainers, et cetera, et cetera.
That if the market were operating naturally,
yes,
that would get sucked. More of it would
more
be sucked
of
up
it
by the
would
the
go to the people
players,
who are
like it does in the pros.
Right, more of it would go to the people who create the value, and so, you know, that's what we see as the problem, and we think this system is probably untenable going forward. It's taken 100 years for it to really get on the table, like the move with the California legislature, but we all think it's coming because the market will reassert itself.
Lawrence Funderburk, just let you have the last word. We just have about, 30 seconds left.
Yeah, it's been an honor. And Lucia makes a lot of valid points. And definitely, I'm a free market guy, but I'm really a compassionate capitalist. Compassionate capitalist says that, yes, you let the markets work, but you also sometimes have to intervene in a way where other people can take advantage and benefit, not just the privileged few. And I think you say, well, wait a minute, Lawrence, these athletes are the privileged few. No, they're not. Because many of them have so many deficits that are so pronounced. How are we going to bridge those gaps? And if we keep playing around with this game, I always say you're either going to play the hand you're dealt or you're going to get played by it. And it's time for us to step up and do something about it.
Thank you, Lawrence Funderburk, for joining us. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Lawrence Funderburk, certified financial planner, alumnus of Ohio State men's basketball, and a former NBA player, author of the 2017 book Socioeconomics, How Social Classes Think, Act, and Behave Financially in the 21st Century. And Lucia Dunn, thanks as always for your help on this. I appreciate your time.
Sure, thank you.
Lucia Dunn is a professor of economics at Ohio State University, obviously has studied this issue extensively. Thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.